Aloha and welcome to the Hawaii Family Forum Triple F Podcast. Triple F stands for Faith, Family, and Freedom. Hawaii Family Forum has worked alongside the faith-based community in Hawaii since 1998. Join us today as we continue to work toward a Hawaii where God is honored, religious freedom flourishes, families thrive, and life is cherished. Aloha, everybody. This is Eva Andrade. I am the president of Hawaii Family Forum. And as you all know, we're smack dab in the middle of a very hot and heavy legislative session. And so what we're going to be doing is providing some educational podcasts on some of the issues that are moving through the state legislature. And our first guests on one of the issues that's making its way through our legislature is Laura Burbidge, who has been a former homeschooling mom and involved on the homeschooling issues in Hawaii since 1988. Welcome, Laura.
Hi, good morning, Eva.
And we also have with us, which I'm really excited to hear from, is Peter Kamakaviva-Ole, who is a staff attorney with the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. And he's going to be able to take this particular issue and tear it apart in a legal sense and help us understand why this issue is problematic. Welcome, Peter.
Aloha. Thank you so much for having me.
We're very privileged to have both of you. So let me do this before we jump into the issue. The issue that we're talking about is a bill that's Senate Bill 2323. It's relating to education, and it's actually a bill that, according to the legislative description, would establish procedures for a parent or legal guardian to obtain authorization to homeschool a child. And there's some other legal jargon. Why don't I let both of you kind of introduce yourselves and let people know more about your background and how you got involved in this issue. And we'll start with you, Laura.
I am the last family to complete homeschooling that actually helped pass this, the regulation that governs homeschoolers right now. And so that was back in 1988, and I have to say that God was very gracious to us in that we met for a whole year trying to iron out all of our differences, and at the very last meeting, the Board of Education made a 180-degree turn in favor of us. And so we've seen this as just a huge, huge blessing, and for all these years, we have never seen any legislation introduced like this that would be oppressive and discriminatory and just targeting homeschool families. So in all these years, we have been very, very free to do what we feel is best for our own community. We've tried to keep each other accountable, and I think it's worked well. I was even able to see the superintendent, who at the time, back in 1988, governed the Board of Education. I saw him about 20 years later, and I asked him, what did he think about the homeschoolers now? And he said it was the best decision he had ever made while he was on the board. And so that was thrilling to hear, and he said he was very pleased to see what's happened within the homeschool community, how it's grown, and how the children are progressing, especially academically. So I've been involved as a beyond after I homeschooled my children. I continue to teach civics, economics, and debate. And now I'm just trying to advocate as much as possible for the homeschool community whenever I can. So thank you.
Well, we really appreciate your hard work. Laura, as you know, it's not easy to always be down at the Capitol watching these kind of things. And it's kind of disheartening that we actually have to do kind of this educational piece on this now, because as you said, the system has been working really well. So we want to make sure that as we move through this podcast, that we give people a good understanding of what's actually happening and why there are people out there that feel this particular bill needs to be passed. So Peter, tell us a little bit about you.
Thank you, Eva. I was raised here in Hawaii, homeschooled here, kindergarten through 12th grade, lived in Palolo Valley originally, and then out to Pearl City, and finally out in Eva Beach. So it's wonderful to be home. I'm actually here in the islands for the hearing on Wednesday because of the tremendous challenges that are posed by this bill After graduating from high school, again, all the way from homeschool and all the way to graduation, I went out to Virginia for undergrad and then St. Louis, Missouri for law school, and now work for Homeschool Legal Defense Association as an attorney, where I had the privilege of working with homeschooling families across the country, including more than 400 families right here in Hawaii. So it really is amazing to come full circle. My parents were members of HSLDA when they were homeschooling me, and now it's really humbling and amazing to be able to give back to the homeschooling community as a part of that same organization. And again, just a privilege to be here sharing with you this morning as well.
So I'm sure that there are some listeners that are going, Kamaka Viva Ole, is it that family? So is it that family?
Yes. So my branch of the family hails from the Big Island instead of Niihau. But yes, we are related, same as Brada is. In fact, funny enough, I was getting ready for it to come back for this hearing and had some Hawaiian music on, which I like to play, especially in the cold winter months up on the mainland. And my 5-year-old, who is the only one who looks like he's Hawaiian among our 5 children, walked into the room. And there was a video of Brada is playing. And so just a wonderful organic opportunity to talk to him about the culture here in Hawaii and about the wonderful gift of music that we have, and of course all the other wonderful parts of our culture, local culture here that make living in Hawaii so special.
Well, we definitely are, as I mentioned earlier, privileged and honored to have both of you share your mana'o today. So let's dive in. So we're talking about Senate Bill 2323. And Laura, maybe you might be the best person to answer this, but Peter, if there's something that you want to jump in on, please do. So our legislature, and there was quite a number of senators who put their name on this bill, Senator Kahele, Galuteria, Inoue, Kidani, Chang, Dela Cruz, Kim, Shimabukuro, and Wakai, they are the ones that introduced this bill. They put their name on it. And it's interesting because in the introduction of the bill, they go into this information provided to them by the Coalition for Responsible Home Education and whatnot. So, Laura, tell us, why are we here? Why do they think that there's a problem that needs to be fixed?
Well, there was a case on the Big Island last summer where I believe she was 9. She died. And according to the news report, the mother had taken her out of the school, and apparently she had filed the notice of intent, which is what's necessary here in Hawaii. But she did not do what she was supposed to for this child, and eventually the child died. The problem here, though, is that CPS had already been involved in this child's life since she was a toddler. And so why didn't CPS follow up, even though she was in a homeschool setting? So it's not the idea of homeschooling her, it's the fact that CPS did not follow through on this child, even though there were 3 educators in that school who had reported suspicion of abuse to the principal, but the principal didn't act on it. So that's one of the biggest cases that came up this past summer. And right after we saw the article, the newspaper article mentioned, I think it was Senator Green wanting to do something legislatively. And so here we are now with this. The other case, Peter Boy Kema, this was in the mid-90s. He was a 5-year-old, I believe, but that would not have been of compulsory age. And so for him to be considered home as a homeschooler, he was not, because there was no requirement for them to file any kind of a notice of intent at that time. And he also had been followed by CPS since he was a toddler. So I believe again and again, CPS has, whether it's too much of a caseload or whatever the reasoning, but they did not follow through on their job.
And how many children are in the home schooling system here in Hawaii?
They say there's about 7,000 children that are being homeschooled at this point, but we're not sure if the public school system has kept up with purging their files and being up to date with keeping their records of the children that have already graduated and so forth.
It's interesting because when they list all of these things, and again, when I say they, I'm talking about the Coalition for Responsible Home Education. And Peter, maybe you can jump in on this. They're claiming that this bill needs to happen because in the homeschool setting, children are subjected to physical abuse. They're subjected to verbal and emotional abuse. They're confined and subjected to food deprivation. They're isolated and part of a totalistic family environment. They may be adopted, have special needs, they're subjected to medical neglect, identity abuse, and they could potentially be vulnerable to human trafficking or may go missing. So how do you respond to that based on your knowledge and experience with the homeschooling system here in Hawaii?
The great tragedy in our country, and it's true across the world, is that children are subjected to physical abuse and verbal and emotional abuse and food deprivation and all those negative things that are referenced in the bill, regardless of their educational setting, regardless of the wealth of the parents, regardless of the number of adults in people's lives, even when social services is in people's lives. I think the problem with the bill and the larger argument that's raised by the Coalition for Responsible Home Education is that they are focusing simply on anecdotes, and there's no denial that there are situations where families have claimed to be homeschooling when in fact they're not. But the problem with focusing just on anecdotes is that we have a tendency to confuse an anecdote with a cause. And there's been a lot of research done. In fact, President Obama commissioned a national coalition to go across the country. They spent more than 2 years touring the country back in 2012 to 2015, studying across the country the actual causes of child abuse, child neglect, and fatalities in children. And the commission, at the end of that time, published a 150-page report that came out in early 2016. That report identifies a number of important risk factors that can place children at an increased risk for child abuse, deaths or serious harm from child abuse. But those risk factors include things like the age of the child. 75% of all children who suffer abuse are under the age of three. 50% of them are under the age of one, which is, again, a tremendous tragedy, but it's not a tragedy that compulsory attendance laws or homeschooling laws are equipped to deal with, because, of course, in the state of Hawaii, until you're the age of five, there is no schooling that takes place, at least not required under state law. Another important risk factor is the absence of two parents in the home. When there's a single parent, especially if there's a live-in boyfriend, that's an increased risk factor as well. For practical reasons, most homeschooling families can't homeschool if there's just a one-parent family, because homeschooling takes tremendous amounts of time and effort on the part of parents, and a single parent family has a very difficult time doing that because of the financial constraints that are placed on them. In fact, if you take a look at the risk factors identified from the convention, nowhere in any of the 150 pages in the report is homeschooling or any other educational setting, whether that's public school or private school, identified as a risk factor. And the convention is hardly unique in that conclusion. The World Health Organization has reached a similar conclusion. So has the United Nations when it's looked at this issue. So have the American Association of Psychologists. In fact, there's no study, scientific study, on the risk factors of child abuse that I'm aware of that has ever identified educational setting in general or homeschooling in particular as a risk factor that places children in heightened danger of abuse or neglect. The other important thing to bear in mind is, as I think there's an assumption in the bill, and it's shared by the Coalition for Responsible Homeschooling, that homeschooling families in general are isolated. And that is simply not the case here in Hawaii. Hawaii, of course, has a long history of community, of family. Ohana and family means more than just your immediate family members. It means your extended family members and those that you choose to include in your family, in your ohana. And the homeschooling community in Hawaii shares that commitment to community. Just growing up myself, and this is 20 years ago, mind you, before the advent of social media, before email made it easy to coordinate schedules with families. I don't remember any time during my homeschool journey where we didn't regularly see other homeschooling families, whether that was for co-op, for a government class or a speech class, for robotics, if you were more skilled than I was, for chess club or symphony. And that was my experience growing up. I literally can't think of a single time in my homeschooling journey when we were isolated and not meeting regularly with other families. And unfortunately, this current bill seems to assume something that just isn't reality here in the state of Hawaii about the nature of the homeschooling community.
You know, you bring up a really good point because a lot of listeners may not have ever experienced homeschooling. They don't understand how it works. So Laura, walk through the way that it works right now. If a couple decides that they want to homeschool their child, what is the current law here in Hawaii? What would they have to do?
They would have to go ahead and submit a notice of intent. That would be a letter stating the name, age, address, and so forth of the child. They would record the grade that the child is going to be in, submit that to the local public school that the child would have gone to, and on the school's end, they would go ahead and fill a form, a government form, 4140. The principal would acknowledge the fact that the family is going to homeschool their child. The district superintendent would also acknowledge. So not give permission or approve, but just acknowledge the fact that we are going to go ahead and homeschool this child. And they get the family will go ahead and get started. At the end of their school year, they will have to submit some sort of progress report, which could be, you know, in three different forms. One could be a report by a certified teacher. Another could be a test score, a standardized test score. And the other could be a narrative report, which the parent would go ahead and put together, and that would be submitted to the school. And so that's how the school touches base with the family each year. So the cases that we've even talked about, there would had to have been some sort of touch with the school at some point in time. And if there wasn't, then it would have been the school's burden to go ahead and find out, where is your progress report for this past school year. So that's why the law stands simply right now.
And I just want to make sure, are we talking about the Board of Education Administrative Rule 12? Is that where the homeschooling compulsory attendance exceptions are?
Exceptions. We fall under the exceptions to the compulsory attendance law.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so Peter, with the way this bill is written, that would change, right? I mean, who would then have oversight on a parent's request to homeschool their child?
There are actually a number of changes, and the answer to that particular question is not remarkably clear. There's a functional change in the bill. Currently, principals would oversee of your individual school. This bill would place the challenge of overseeing all of the homeschool programs within a district with the district superintendent, who could potentially delegate it to somebody else in the superintendent's office. So that's a significant change. It does centralize the problem, goes one step removed. Instead of parents interacting with their local school principals where the child would be enrolled, we're now one step higher up in the process. The other significant change in the bill is that it would transform Hawaii from what we call a notice state to an approval state. What does that mean? Well, currently in Hawaii, if you want to homeschool your child as a parent, of course, you have a constitutional right under the 14th Amendment to do that. The Supreme Court has held for nearly 100 years now that the rights of parents include the right to choose the form of education of the child, whatever form of education that is, whether that's public, private, or home education. Here in Hawaii, consistent with that constitutional requirement, if you're a parent and you want to exercise your constitutional rights, you let the school district know that you want to do that. We call that notice, and your notice would include all the things that Laura just mentioned. Here, if the regime in SB 2323 comes into effect, that would radically change. In addition to still submitting the notice of intent, which families would still have to do, the notice now goes to a superintendent, and the superintendent is charged with approving that notice rather than just accepting it and taking note of the family exercising their constitutional right. The state actually has to physically and verbally approve the homeschool program. And part of the process by which they do that is require that families in their notice of intent also consent to extensive background checks. And we're not just talking about state criminal background check, although that's included in the regime. We're also talking about a CPS records check, a sex offender records check, and not just Hawaii records would be checked. The bill also says that federal databases would need to be checked. And if any adult, and it's not only for homeschooling parents, it's for any adult who resides in the home, and it's records not just here in Hawaii, not just federally, but also in any state where any adult in the home has ever resided. And this is for every single family that homeschools. There's an estimate in the bill that 7,000 students are currently homeschooled. Here in the islands, there's no indication of how many families, but even if we assume that there's seven children in each family and just one parent for each family, and of course the actual numbers of families is going to be much higher than that, we're still talking about at least 1,000 checks that have to be done at the state, federal, and potentially the multi-state level. This is an incredible, unprecedented requirement in order to homeschool. There's not a single state in the country that requires any sort of mandatory background checks for all homeschooling parents. And here we'd this bill would require not just mandatory background checks, but multiple mandatory background checks before parents can exercise their right to homeschool.
Well, I know that when we sent out our first notice, the two big questions were, if the government can come into your home and decide if you are able to, or not even able, if they decide that you can homeschool your children or not, could they then later come in and decide what you teach your kids? Could that happen? And the other thing is, it sounds like they have a lot of different oversights that they want to do. You know, they want to have child protective services involved. They want to have the superintendent. I mean, is this going to cost taxpayer money? And is there follow through? So even if the bill passes and they do a home check on this family, do they have to keep making checks? Because couldn't it be that there could be somebody that may pass all of this stuff and then later prove to be problematic? I mean, I guess I'm asking, will that solve the problem?
And those are excellent questions to ask. The simplest answer I can give is we currently don't know exactly what's going to be required. The bill as written does talk about those federal, those state, those multi-state background checks needing to be done. But the bill gives school superintendents multiple factors that they can look at in determining whether or not they want to deny a homeschool program, one of which is if there's other information that comes to the superintendent's attention that calls into question the homeschool program. And the bill does not define what other information would look like. And this is concerning for a number of reasons. Of course, there's a large overarching concern on the part of homeschooling parents about the state coming in and regulating aspects of their curriculum, particularly if they're religious homeschoolers and they want to have some faith-based components. There are, of course, constitutional reasons why that would be a serious issue. The Establishment Clause of the First Amendment prevents the government from intervening and interfering in the religious decisions of families. And of course, the decision to provide religious instruction, the kind and the nature and the manner of that instruction are all protected by the First Amendment. And in a broader sense, there's a growing move among certain aspects of social services, law professors and individuals who oversee social services, to argue that faith-based instruction of any sort can be detrimental necessarily to the harm of a child, and no teacher, no parent should be indoctrinating young children until a child is old enough to make a decision on religious instruction for him or herself. This is not a new argument, unfortunately. There was a law professor, Catherine Groff, out of George Washington Law School, who declared more than 10 years ago now that in order to promote tolerance in society, parents should be prevented from providing religious indoctrination to their children because it's not tolerant to predispose children to accepting one particular set of core values. And if that viewpoint, which is currently still fringe, but has had time over the last 10 years to go through the academic circles. If that viewpoint ever finds its way into a caseworker who conducts an investigation of a family or a superintendent who's reviewing these, the bill would allow a caseworker or a social worker to make a recommendation based on that, and that could very well fall within the other information that the family, that could be used against the family to deny their ability to homeschool.
You know, I was preparing for this podcast and I've read the bill a couple of times anyway, but because I've been doing this for so long in the community, when they were giving those list of seven things that to look for in these kids that could potentially be problematic, the thing that stuck out for me is when it said subjected to medical neglect and identity abuse. That identity abuse set up a bunch of red flags for me. Peter, you want to talk about that? I mean, what is identity abuse? Does that mean that if a child identifies a certain way and a parent is a faith-based person and they kind of want to talk their kid through that, could a CPS worker say that that's problematic? I mean, is that what identity abuse is?
It's very possible that that is what it is. That term, like many of the other terms in the bill, is not defined, so we don't know for purposes of the bill what it looks like. And there's really no definition as to what the superintendent has to look at or what the superintendent bases his or her decision on. There are, just to put this in sort of a broader context, this idea of this approval statute, there are only two states in the United States that still require approval for homeschool programs. They're Rhode Island and Massachusetts up in the Northeast. And in both of the of those states, approval means that you get a formal document from the local school committee that says your homeschool program is assumed, is approved. But if, in terms of what parents have to do, the law is very clear about what parents have to submit. And it tells the local school committees that you shall approve the program if X, Y, and Z is submitted to you. In other words, these are not states where, even though there's approval, there's not limitless discretion on the part of school officials. If you take a look at SB 2323, contrary to what happens in Rhode Island, contrary to what you see in Massachusetts, there's virtually unbridled discretion for the superintendents. In fact, if you take a look at the operative language of the bill, the bill says that if there's no problem with the records check, or if a family court order is issued, the superintendent may approve the homeschool program. It doesn't say that it shall. And if you look at the other operative language, what happens when you get a negative records check or you show up on a child abuse registry, the language doesn't say you shall deny the homeschool program. It says you may deny it. And again, so all of this is left to the discretion of superintendents. The superintendents have no clear direction from the legislature in this bill as to when, what types of information, what types of records, what types of notices get approval and which don't. And this is a major issue, not just for homeschooling families who have the problem of trying to hit a moving target as they're preparing their information. It's also extremely dangerous for superintendents because the bill actually creates a legal cause of action where superintendents can be sued if their actions aren't reasonable. And at the very least, I would hope that if the legislature is going to create a new cause of action to sue superintendents over this bill, they would at least give the superintendents clear direction on what it is they're supposed to do, what denials are reasonable and what denials are not. And that's just one of the many problems that's presented here in this bill, is that the bill, for all its wonderful intentions about trying to protect families, trying to protect are taking, is frankly just not well designed to meet those goals. And I fear it's going to create a lot of unintended consequences for families, for caseworkers, and for school officials.
This is a great, we've actually been talking, believe it or not, for about 30 minutes. And I want to continue the conversation because I want Laura to actually talk to some of the parents who might be homeschooling their kids, but not just them, to also talk to parents who don't have kids in the homeschool system and why they need to be concerned about this bill. So if you two are willing, we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to jump right back into the bill. Aloha, this is Eva Andrade, president of Hawaii Family Forum, and we are pleased that you were able to join us on this weekly Triple F podcast. We hope you'll join us next week. Take care and God bless.